Hey folks, Jared Sylvester here. Thank you so much for checking out this podcast from Repurposed.
When I got to Haiti, it was going into those spaces where the kids were, seeing them and seeing the place they were at, no family at that point, and the prospects of their future, you know, really bleak.
Right.
And seeing them and saying, yeah, that's it. Like, these are the people that need to hear that word from me. They're the ones that potential seems like it's not even a pipe dream. Mm-hmm. That's my calling. That's it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Repurposed, a show dedicated to inspire you to live a life of purpose, intentionality, and impact. I'm your host, Jared Sylvester of Taegis Financial Group. We are a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we like to teach true wealth. If you want to find out more information on us and our business, just go to our website, taegisfinancial.com. Well, on this week's episode of Repurposed, I'm so excited to be bringing you an interview with a good friend of mine. His name is Jamie Groen. Now, Jamie is the executive director of Children of the Promise. It's dedicated to caring for at-risk children and families in northern Haiti. He lives in Wilmer, Minnesota with his wife and his six children, four of which are from Haiti. Jamie talks about how he and his wife, when they were first married, they were living in Southern California. They were both teachers, just living the dream, didn't have children, were able to do all the things that people want to do in life, go to the beach all the time. But he felt compelled to take this trip to Haiti. And during that first trip, he kind of had a come to Jesus moment. He had an epiphany where he realized his purpose and his calling. It was a potential that was spoken into him years ago, and now he's able to live that out throughout his work and his family to change the lives of children and change the world. Here's how you can do it. Here's my chat with Jamie Groen.
Children of the Promise is a faith-based Christian organization. Our primary work happens in the country of Haiti, in the Caribbean, and really just at the core of what we do is believing and working with vulnerable infants and children in Haiti. And really where the call began back in 2000 was just this northern city in Cap Haitian, northern Haiti, and just an absolute lack of anyone being there to help kids and particularly infants who are orphaned or abandoned. And then beyond that, also the families that are the other side of that.
Yeah.
You know, why did they get in that context? And so today, what it's grown into is we meet a couple of different sides of the need. Primarily, first off, we work with any children who are orphaned or abandoned. And our vision is healthy Christian home and family for every Haitian child.
Yeah, so it's more than just an orphanage.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. We don't even actually usually use that term to describe ourselves. In Haiti, we're a creche, but just the basic difference is we don't raise children to adulthood. We're always looking to get them into a family because we believe that's what God created into our system is kids are supposed to be a part of families.
Yeah. So how many kids are down there right now?
Yeah, in our care, there's about 50 children.
Okay.
And so these are our children, the majority of them, who are in the adoption process.
Sure.
Because they are orphaned or abandoned or placed in our care by Haitian social services.
I see.
So that's one big portion of what we do. Well, over the years, as we did that more and more, we realized, hey, there's a family on the other end of this story every single time, a Haitian family. And how can we get into those families and come alongside them and help this kind of thing to not happen? Because that's the ideal, right? Is to keep the kids with their birth families, their bio families. And so that's grown a lot of programs. Efforts have been added to really target vulnerable families in northern Haiti.
What is it? Just poverty or what? Why does this, this happen?
Yeah. So you guys have probably heard Haiti is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. And so
is that true?
It is.
Okay.
It is. And it's pretty by a pretty good margin. The vast majority of people in Haiti are living in abject poverty.
Right.
And so that is the primary reason that families come to us, is just because they can't provide for their kids, mm-hmm. housing, food, medical, all of those reasons. And so we just get a lot of families who are making really hard choices for their kids who they love.
Yeah.
So we've added over the years just really practical programs. It always comes back to the question, why did this child end up in our care? And kind of work our way backwards. And so in some cases, it's malnutrition. Okay, let's start a nutrition program that can treat that with the families, work with them, get them back on track. A lot of children end up in unhealthy spots because of an unhealthy pregnancy. So we started a prenatal program.
I see.
Try to get out in front of it. And then some of our other programs are more continuation-based. So you have a family who's at risk. We may have been able to help them through an earlier program, like an intervention program, but what's their outlook on the future? And so we have a lot of education-based programs that try to extend that. Hey, this is a at-risk family. How do we stick with them to make sure that they don't fall back into that spot again in the future?
How many staff are on COTP?
We have around 75 Haitian staff in Haiti, and then we currently have 14 missionaries, so international staff living in Haiti. And then we also have 5 office staff here in Wilmer, Minnesota.
So the headquarters is here in Wilmer, Minnesota.
It is.
What is your title exactly?
I'm the executive director. Okay. My wife and I actually were called to move to Haiti. We did that in 2009.
Okay.
So just about 9 years.
Gotcha. One question I was going to ask you is, how many times have you been down there total? Probably a ton.
Yeah, I'll typically try to go down 3, maybe 4 times a year. And so over all those years, well, we did live there for over a year.
Yeah.
And then since then, maybe 25 times.
Okay, wow. To somebody who, like myself, who hasn't been around a lot, the third world countries, like what do you, is it, when you get off the plane, is it just like a totally different world?
Yeah, first trip was definitely shock value. And it's
what do you notice? Like when you get off the plane, like what's the first, is it the smell? Is it just the what it looks like?
It's the absolute contrast, especially in a place like Haiti that exists, is that physically it is one of the most beautiful places in the world. You know, lush jungle, rolling mountains, beautiful beaches.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tropical paradise.
Right.
But then, and you see that from the air as you're flying in.
Right.
But then when you get off the plane and you start driving, it's poverty. And something I've always told people is that you can see pictures of poverty, but until you get there and your other senses kick in, you smell, you
that's
feel.
That's what I've heard. What is it, like burning garbage?
Yeah,
a
lot of trash.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things you just don't experience here because they don't exist here. And so, there's not trash management, especially in the bigger cities.
Right.
Yeah, poor sanitation. So you're just smelling a lot of things we're not used to smelling here.
Yeah.
And then there's people in it. And that's just the jarring, the heartbreaking part. And so you kind of go through this daze the first couple days you're there. Mm. But almost every person who goes down there and comes back, what they're so taken by is the people. Mm. And living in that context, the perspective they still have. There is definitely a contentment factor that exists in Haiti that I think a lot of us here wouldn't comprehend.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
You know, that someone could be living in that context and find a place of being grateful for life, being content in the things they have rather than be discontent with what they don't have. Right. And that's not to say that it's okay that they're in poverty or that they're okay with staying there. It's just that in those moments, they can still find contentment in family, in relationships, in what they do have.
Do you still kind of get the shot? You've been there, you know, 24 times. I think when people come back, you know, they say things like, I'm never going to take a warm shower for granted ever again. And then like a month later, you kind of get back in the rhythm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Since you've been down there so much and work with people down there, has that really changed your perspective almost permanently?
Yeah, I think it has. I think, you know, one thing I think I've moved on from is maybe the guilty feelings about, you know, things I have here and stuff like that. But what it has done is really impacted the choice I make in my life.
Hmm.
You know, seeing people, working with people constantly who have less but yet are finding contentment pushes me to ask the question, well, do I really need those things to be happy?
Right.
And you often then don't choose to have the physical things to be happy. And, you know, relationships, community, means so much more after having gotten to know people who found some secrets down there that maybe I didn't know before.
Right. And also who have just basically literally nothing, probably.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Talk about your family. I just got to be honest. I'm fascinated by your family. I have three small kids myself, 7, 5, and 3, all biological kids. And, you know, life's a little crazy. And talk about your kids. So, I mean, first of all, how many kids do you have?
I got 6.
Okay, so you got 6.
Yeah.
Most of them are adopted.
Yeah, so we have 4 adopted.
Okay.
And then 2 biological.
Okay, and ages range from what?
Yeah, so we have 10, 10, 9, 7, 5, 3.
And 3, okay. Yeah. And the 7-year-old and the 3-year-old are biological. The rest are adopted from Haiti.
Yep.
So you started off, you and your wife, Jenny, no children. And then you decided back in 2009 to not adopt 1, not 2, but 3 children. How did you get to that point?
Yeah.
I mean, to go from 0 to 1 is a big deal. Yep. To go from 0 to 3 adopted kids is another thing. How do you get there?
Yeah, I would say that seed was planted long before that. So it kind of goes back. My wife's involvement with Children of the Promise goes back to way in the beginning, 2001, is when she first got involved. And over those early years with Children of the Promise, her family actually decided to adopt from Children of the Promise. We were dating at the time and then got married. And so I got to experience a relationship with an adopted brother and sister-in-law. And, I mean, it changed my heart. Hmm. And it definitely impacted our view of what maybe God had on the horizon for us, what our family would look like. And it was just kind of implanted in our mind. We didn't talk a ton about it, but it felt like it was just assumed that adoption was on our horizon.
Yeah.
Didn't know what that would look like. I think we expected it to be, we'll have a family first and then we'll adopt and on that tail end. And, you know, even before that move to Haiti and adoption, we were living some kind of dream. We had graduated from college. We were teachers. We were living in Southern California.
Yeah. How long were you married at this point?
Yeah, so we got married in 2003, and so...
Okay, so you've been married for several years.
Yeah, we've been married. We actually got married, and then after college spent 4 years living together in Southern California.
Gotcha, yeah.
Los Angeles.
You're living the dream.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
Had a home, 2 dogs, you know, going to the beach every weekend. my wife had for years been trying to convince me to take a trip to this place was in her heart, Children of the Promise in Haiti. And I'd kind of found reasons not to do it. And not that I was against it, but I just didn't see that on my horizon. I didn't think that I was that like baby person. And it's like, oh yeah, I'll go to a third world, but maybe not babies. Hmm. Well, she convinced me to do it in 2008, and I got there and I was struck, and it was this sense of clarity of this is who I'm supposed to be.
Hmm.
This is my calling. This is my purpose. And
how did you know that? what do you experience in your heart to know that? Because I get asked that question all the time. Like, how do you know, like, you're in, like, this is it? Like, what did you experience in your heart for you to know that?
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, I've been driven towards, you know, finding this purpose for many years, even going back into high school. And I think I could always kind of quantify it as my calling is towards people. And investing in and believing in people, and this kind of like unlocking their potential, telling them you're valuable, you're special, God loves you, He has a plan for you. Hmm. And that's really what led me to teaching in the beginning.
Sure.
And I loved teaching, and it was that alone unlocked a part of myself that I didn't know I had before. But when I got to Haiti, it was going into those spaces where the kids were, seeing them and seeing the place they were at. No family at that point. I mean, and the prospects of their future, you know, really bleak.
Right.
And seeing them and saying, yeah, that's it. Like, these are the people that need to hear that word from me. They're the ones that potential seems like it's not even a pipe dream.
Hmm.
And that's my calling. That's it. And it was in those moments, too, where I looked around and said, this is my calling and I can do something. And that's been a big part of me for many years too, is this whole potential conversation. It's huge for me because it's something I believe was spoken into me. People told me, Jamie, you matter. Your life matters. You have a potential that God wants you to see reached, and you need to go after it. And if you do that, you're going to change the world.
Mm.
And so.
No, you get a chance to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to do. And you know, it sounds like kind of a higher thing to say, oh, you're going to change the world. But, you know, I've seen it now. You get into those moments and you say, well, it's not some lofty strategic plan to change the world. It's interacting with every single person and stepping into that moment, taking that moment for what it is, taking, you know, capturing it and speaking life and purpose into that person and saying, you matter. You have a plan. You just got to believe.
So this is back in 2008.
Yeah.
You're still married, no kids. So how did that translate into coming back to Minnesota, going on staff at that point?
Yeah.
With COTP and then adopting three children. So I still fasted.
Yeah. So we moved down and we told friends and family, we're 99% sure this is a 1-year commitment. We're going to go back.
So you moved down. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. And our jobs were actually held for us in California. They said, oh yeah, we come back and teach here. Yeah.
When the fog settles.
Yeah. We got about 3 months in and we looked at each other and we said, we're not going back. Wow. We're not going back to California. We're not going back to that old life. This is what we're called to, something new. And just in that moment, it was like that light switch turning on. You know, adoption is coming and it's now.
Okay.
And so we literally didn't have a conversation about adoption until one day, my wife said, we have something to talk about. And I said, absolutely. I know exactly what we're going to talk about.
Really?
And, you know, on a couch in an apartment in Northern Haiti at Children of the Promise, she says, I think we're called to adopt. And I said, absolutely. And she said, how many kids? And I said, 3. She said, exactly. And I was like, but which 3? And she said the names of the kids. And we were, you know, we hadn't had that conversation, but it's that moment of like, God had placed it in our hearts. And they were 3 kids that we had interacted a lot with. But it was just clear. And, from there, a lot of things just fell into place.
Were you planning on coming back to Minnesota at that point?
We weren't, you know, and we were at a place of not quite knowing where God was going to put us next.
Two young people married. Now we're going to adopt 3 kids and we're in a foreign country and we're just going to figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. And there was some time in there where we felt like, okay, with what the adoption process looks like, this is going to take years and it's going to be extremely hard. But we said, let's do it. We're called here. This is what our family's supposed to look like. God knows there are kids already. So let's start it. And literally 2 months later, there was an earthquake in Haiti. And I mean, it shook everything. It changed what we were going to do.
Was that the big one?
It was the big one.
In 2010?
Yep, 2010.
No kidding. So you were down there.
Yeah,
then.
We felt it.
Wow.
No damage where we were, but definitely saw all the secondary effects of it and, you know, heard the stories, had people, kids come into our care because of it. But really for our life plan and adoptions, it shook that too, because it did something radical for our adoptions. At the time, since so much of the files and things in Port-au-Prince were destroyed, they had this humanitarian parole program where they flipped the adoptions and they said, okay, let's send the kids to the States and finalize their adoptions there. So anyone in process at that point finished their adoptions in the States. Well, one day we're sitting thinking, okay, the next 10 years we're going to be here. And the next moment it was, to finish your adoptions, you need to move to Minnesota. And so we did. And, you know, it's just one of those things that the steps were already laid out for us. Yeah. We didn't know what was next, but by the summer of 2010, we were back in Minnesota.
Now with 3 kids.
Yeah, with 3 kids. and my wife pregnant. She was actually, he was an earthquake baby as well, because she got pregnant within a month of the earthquake.
Kidding. Wow. So now you're going to go on 4.
So 4 within a year.
Okay.
But yeah, then we ended up back in Minnesota, and at the time the founders had been working so hard for several years to get this thing off the ground. We joined the staff here in Minnesota, and then through the next couple of years I transitioned to kind of take over for them. And because we had grown up with the family, we graduated with the founder's daughter, Robin, who still works for the organization. It was such a natural transition to us, and same hearts for the ministry, knew the same people, knew the same things, and now we're here today.
So you've been here ever since, kind of more in an administrative role here from Minnesota. Since then, you've adopted another gal, Angelina.
Yes.
And then you've had another boy, Jack, who's now 3.
Yep.
This latest adoption you had, tell us about Angelina.
Yeah. So some would probably qualify us in the crazy category to even have the four to begin with, and then another biological child. But just over 3 years ago, we really just had a place in our hearts again through a similar conversation. We sat down on a couch, and my wife said, "We have something to talk about. I think we're supposed to adopt again." And I said, "Absolutely." And again, a name of a child, Angelina, on our hearts. And actually, that story goes back a little bit further, that one of our staff in Haiti had written just an open-ended blog post. And it said to a letter to A's mom, because she couldn't say her name. Hmm. And my wife read that, and I read that, and my wife's instant response is, "That letter's to me. Hmm. I'm supposed to be her mom." And just to give some context, my daughter, Angelina, who's been home for about a month now, so it's really fresh.
Yeah, seriously.
We like to look at her and say she's uniquely gifted. She has cerebral palsy. Hmm. And I love that phrase, uniquely gifted, because you get to know her and you see she's not defined by her special needs. She's not defined by a disability. She's defined by this unique way that she sees the world, unique way that she brings joy to the world. And, you know, we've gotten to spend the trips to Haiti to get to know her. And then now the last month. And I mean, Angelina, she communicates joy like no person I've ever met in this world.
But it's so countercultural what you're doing. First of all, you've got six kids. And then you went out and purposely, intentionally went out and got Angelina. Who is probably physically the most demanding?
Yeah,
could be. You've had to change your lifestyle. You've had to buy new vans. You've had to change your house, right, to accommodate for her wheelchair. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What? Just do you feel weird? You know what I mean? And I mean that in the nicest way possible. And I'm just speaking from a societal standpoint. Yeah. Like society nowadays, you know, young people, it's like, let's hold off having children or not having children at all because I don't want to be, you know, I don't want the inconvenience. You know, I want to just live my life and have freedom. You're choosing literally to go the opposite way. Just speak into that. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I'm definitely aware anywhere we go in our big, you know, excursion and that we're different.
Yeah. But not in a bad way.
Yeah, No. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't take it that way at all. I love my life. It's not the book I would have written when I was 17, 18. But it is everything that brings me joy, that was designed to bring me joy. Mm. I love my kids. I love having a big family. We live on a farm, just outside of Wilmer, and we love it.
It's different from your Southern California, you know,
it definitely
condo,
is.
Probably.
Yep. Yep. But really, you know, the process of stepping into that different, it really started for us when we kind of threw up our hands and said, let's go to Haiti. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, every single time we opened up to it, it felt like we were stepping off a cliff and saying, we don't know what's coming next. We just have to trust that God's got plans here.
Yeah.
It was overwhelming almost every time. But what you find is as you go over that cliff, you experience joy and contentment like you never did before. And so for us, it was just like you start to learn to trust those feelings when you feel nudged into it.
Right.
And you feel like, hey, this is going to be crazy and overwhelming, but if we don't do it, we're going to miss out.
That's right.
Because we're supposed to. This is our life path. Like, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And we've learned to trust that gut, and it's led us into kind of crazy places, and life is busy at times, but you also learn who you are then. You're so stretched in those moments, and so many times we even define ourselves by what we think we can't do. Mm. And it's when you lean into those moments and say, well, maybe I should try. Like, maybe I can do this. Mm. And then God stretches you, and he forms you into this new person, and that's just beautiful. I'm so grateful for who this process has made me to be. And, you know, sometimes we'll get from people a response of, you guys are great. You're doing great. We don't see it that way. We see it as a blessing of what we get to do. I get to be the father of these kids, and it brings me crazy joy.
Tremendous us joy and fulfillment when we walk in our God-given purpose and calling, just like what Jamie mentioned right at the end of our interview there. That's the result, fulfillment and joy, and that's what life is all about. Let's recap Jamie's story, shall we? He said that when I was younger, people told me that I matter. They would say that you have potential. And then when he went to Haiti for that first time, he saw the poverty, he saw the people, and he saw the children, and he said to himself, they are the ones that need to hear that from me. And in those moments is when he realized his calling, that he can do something. And it began with that understanding of finding that potential to change the world. We have to step into that each and every moment, speaking life into people, and that's an opportunity that you and I have each and every day. If you'd like more information on Children of the Promise, just go to their website, childrenofthepromise.org. That'll do it for this week's episode of Repurposed. Just a reminder, this show is based on a book by Ben Tages called Repurposed, The Untold Story of Retirement in America. If you are 50 years old or older and want to get the first two chapters of that book totally free, just go to our website, tagesfinancial.com. You'll see a button in the upper right-hand corner that says Heard Us on the Radio for your free gift just for listening today. Also, a big thanks to Faith Radio for helping us sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this episode, just visit myfaithradio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We'll see you next time on Repurposed. Thanks so much for checking out this episode of Repurposed. Just a reminder, these podcasts are only available because of generous support of people just like you. If you'd like to make a gift and support Faith Radio, go to the website, myfaithradio.com. Also, another way you can help is by sharing these podcasts on social media and subscribing. Just click subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast player, and you'll be sure to never miss a show.